Introduction to Lessons 9 through 13, page 101. Go through this reasonably quickly. So we read, when we begin to learn a new language, we often develop a special way of looking at its words. So if you've learned any Latin, you see the word adoramus. You break it down into its constituent parts. And what you could do is just by rote have memorized adoramus. That's not a very efficient way of learning. The best is to be able to recognize its constituent parts, that there's a stem, ador, meaning ador, and an ending, mus, meaning we. So adoramus, put that together, means we adore. And Hebrew words work the same way, Greek words as well, and so on. These first eight lessons, we learned to read some Hebrew, but not always stop to look at details. For example, we've seen that katala, she killed, and so there we have a suffix a, and tiktol, she will kill, so katala, third feminine singular perfective, tiktol, third feminine singular imperfective, and natana, she gave, and titin, she will give, so again, the perfective and non-perfective forms of natan. But we've not asked why she will give is not tintain. So it's titain instead, and the nun has disappeared. So now we're going to learn a bit more about why these things happen. Section 2. Some common Hebrew words like ach, meaning brother, and shame, a name, have two root letters, what we call radicals. So radical meaning root. But most Hebrew verbs and nouns have three root letters. And this is a distinctive feature, really, of all Semitic languages. And so Hebrew is part of the Semitic family of languages based upon what we call a triradical root, three root letters. So, for example, Amar, he said, is based on the root or the stem, which has three letters, Aleph, Mem, and Resh. And the basic meaning of the stem is to say. And so we find a whole load of different words built upon this stem. Amara, she said. So third feminine singular perfective. Vayomer, and he said. The continuing narrative. Amer, a noun meaning a word of speech. And ma'amar, command or edict. Now, it might be that you're reading along and you come across one of those words, say ma'amar, and you don't recognize it, but you recognize that it has the aleph, mem, and resh, that root there, and so you'll can have a very good guess that it's going to be something to do with speaking. Look at two more examples in which root letters occur in a whole group of words with related meanings. The letters mem, lamed, kaf indicate rule or kingship. So we have Malach, he reigned. Timlok, she will reign. Hamelech, the king. Melech, construct form, the king of. Mamlecha, kingdom. Mamlakto, his kingdom. So that's Mamlecha in construct form ending with Tav and then a suffix on it. Malka, queen, and Malkat, queen of. So all built upon those same three letters, where those root letters indicate the basic meaning, and then the vowels vary. So we have Melech, a king, Malki, my king. Then second example, the root Yalad, Yod, Lamed, Dalet, which also sometimes occurs in the form Vav, Lamed, Dalet. So it can begin with either Yod or Vav, and we have a little footnote there saying, referring to note halfway down the page, Yalad had an earlier form, Valad. And we find this in a lot of cases, the Yod and the Vav in verbs can sometimes be interchangeable. And both of them then readily disappear. So footnote 2, referring to Lamed Dalet, the initial Yod of Yalad is a weak letter and sometimes drops out. So we have most consonants are what we call strong letters. That there are about four of them that are weak letters, and they also include Vav, hey, nun. And then lamed tends to disappear readily as well if it's an initial letter. So those four weak letters, yod, vav, he, and nun. So words built upon that triradical root, yalad, we have yalada, she gave birth to, nolad, he was born, where there we have a vav instead of a yod, vayoled, then he begat, yalada, she acted as a midwife, where in that case there's a dagesh in the lamet. Vayit yaladu, and they registered their ancestry, where now we have a prefix yit, and then there's a suffix. Yalud isha, born of woman. Yelad, meaning a boy. Yalada, the feminine form, meaning a girl. Yaladut, childhood. Myaledet, midwife. Yom huledet, birthday. And Yalid bait. So, a bunch of those are words you've never seen before, but the key is to recognize what the root is, and then you thought, oh, it's got to have something to do with the birthing of children. Then, a cautionary note, while there are many groups of words that come from the same root, share the same consonants, and have a similarity in meaning, there are other words which share with each other the same basic consonants, but are different in meaning and origin. We call these homonyms. They sound the same, but they're different words with different meanings. And we have some of these in English as well. So we have boker, meaning morning, and bakar, meaning cattle. Shavua, meaning oath, and shavua, meaning week. Anna, meaning he answered or he sang. Section 3, additions to the stem. So the basic form or stem of most Hebrew words is made up of two or three root letters, usually three, and then we can make additions to the front of those letters. So basic form, we have davar, meaning word. Then we can have hadavarim, so in this case we've added a prefix consisting of the definite, the article, ha. Vayadabaru. There are two prefixes really, there's the va and then ya. And then divrehem, now there's a suffix on that. it's a little complex. In the instances here, you have to do a bit of figuring out. So in the case of B, it's hadavarim.
Is it because there is a dagesh?
And that one is because there's a dagesh there, that is a vocal shava. So the letter, the dalet, is doubled. Hadavarim. And the next one, hayidavaru, it's because the next consonant, dalet, does not have a dagesh in it, which means it must be preceded by an open consonant, which has a vowel. So it couldn't be, it couldn't be a silent shva. That was a silent shava, then the dalet there would have a weak dagesh in it. So not only is the fact whether or not it has a dagesh, but you have to figure out whether it's a weak dagesh or a strong dagesh. So in the case of B, hadivarim, the dagesh there is a strong dagesh, so the shava has to be vocal. If C, the dalet had the dagesh in it, would probably be a weak dagesh, and the shva would be silent. So these are some of the things you have to run through in your mind as you're reading along, doing it on the fly to figure out whether it's a silent or a vocal shava.
What does a weak Dagesh look like?
Well, this occurs in six letters. It looks the same. It's just a dot and a letter.
Yeah.
But it it occurs in only the six letters, the Bagat Kafat letters. So Beit, Dalet, Beit, Gimel, Dalet, Kaf, Peh, and Tav. And makes a form between a soft and a hard pronunciation of those letters. So with a Beit, Dagesh and Beit is pronounced as a B. Without a Dagesh, it's without the weak Dagesh, is pronounced as a V. So on. Okay. So you sort of have to do a bit of a process of elimination to figure out whether the shava is silent or vocal. And the best way to do that is just a lot of practice reading.
And you practice reading and hear yourself, don't you? You're saying it wrong.
Okay, we can make additions before the stem. It may indicate a particular reference or modification of a word. In example C, the yod before the stem indicates third person. So remember that when we looked at forms of the verb, yod is third singular or third plural. And because the yod is added before the stem and helps form the word's meaning, we call it a preformative or a prefix. And then we're also told to notice that mem before a verb is a common mark of a noun. So we have amar, he said, and ma'amar, meaning a word or edict. So a mem added on to the front. So if you see something and you recognize the three root letters, and then there's a mem on the front, it's usually a good guess that it's going to be a noun having to do something to do with that, those that root. Malach, he reigned, and mamlaka, a noun formed from that, a kingdom. Lacham, he fought, and milchama, war or battle. Safar, he counted, then a noun based on that, mispar, meaning number. Asa, he did, and ma'ase, a thing done or a thing that is made. Another category of words that can be added on the front, or prefixes that can be added, are short little words added on the front. In example C, we have the conjunction va added onto the front. So yudabaru, we add on the vav, va yudabaru, and that makes it a continuing narrative form of the verb. We can add on example B, ha is added on. It's the article. And these words fixed onto the beginning of another word can also be called a prefix. So two categories of prefixes. One is where you have a whole nother a word joined on the front of a word. That would also be true for min and a k and b and l. And then where you have the prefix forms part of the form of the root word itself. Then we also have suffixes, additions added after the stem. So in example B, the im is a mark of the plural, hadvarim. And we can call these added things that are added at the end of a word a formative or a suffix. In example C, vayadabaru, the u indicates that the third person, which was indicated by the yod prefix, is plural. And then also we can have a short word added to the end of a word. So an example D, the hem of divrei hem. That hem is a whole nother word. It's a pronoun. And what we call, and because it's a suffix, we call it a pronominal suffix. And so it's added onto divrei, which is the construct words of, and it means the words of them. And we're told for a table of suffixes, see page 372. So I'll just point this out to you, and so you're aware of it there. We get a full list of how these personal pronominal suffixes are used on the end of verbs and on the end of nouns. So we've seen these before, and you'll see these a lot of times. So when they're added to the end of a verb, it basically makes it the object of the verb. And then when they're added on to the end of a noun, it usually indicates possession for that noun. Okay, and then for the noun, it can be both. You have one column there for singular nouns, another for plural. Okay, over the page, 104. We have prefixes and changes to the first root letter of some stems. Most verbs are built upon a triradical stem, but things get complicated because sometimes the first root letter disappears. Now, we've already seen, in Lesson 6, we saw that a prefix letter can indicate the person. So a yod prefix is third person, singular or plural. A tav prefix can be second person, you, singular or plural, or can indicate a third feminine, singular or plural. And then an aleph prefix is first singular, and nun prefix is first plural. So, for example, yiktol, he will kill. Yod prefix indicates third person. And yiktolu, they will kill. So we have yod prefix and then a u suffix. So that narrows it down that the third person indicated by the yod prefix is specifically third plural as indicated by the u. Ektol, I will kill, and niktol, we will kill. So that's for the verb katal, which has three strong letters. Now for the verb natan, nun, tav, nun, which has a weak letter as its first root letter, that nun readily disappears. So it's yitin, titin, titani, and titanu, for example, and each of which the nun has disappeared, and it's left behind it a little remnant of itself as a dagesh in that tav. So that tends to happen with these weak letters disappear. And this can confuse you because you look at that and you don't recognize the root letter. Fortunately, with a verb like natan, it's common enough that you'll come to recognize this one. The trouble happens with some of the more rarer verbs where they disappear. Fortunately, the irregular verbs tend to be the common ones. And the same is true in English. I think the 10 most common verbs in English are all irregular. And the less common ones all tend to conform to our regular pattern, fortunately. Example 2, when some verbs have prefixes, they seem to lose the first letter of the stem. So, natan, the root he gave, tends to lose its initial nun. So we have yiten, he will give. Lakak, tends to lose its initial lamed. We have yikak, he will take. And yada, meaning with the root of no, tends to lose its initial yod. So we have teda, she will know. Then note, when the first root letter of a verb is nun, so that weak letter nun, if the nun follows a prefix, if A, the nun follows a prefix, and B, the nun would not have a full vowel, the nun may be absorbed into the following root letter. So natan, he gave, but yiten, he will give. Instead of what we'd expect that to be is yinten, but that the nun there has a silent shavah under it. It's not a complete vowel, so the nun disappears. Naphal, he fell, but Yipol, he will fall. Natah, he bent down, but Vayet, and he bent down. Now that was even more confusing because the Nun has disappeared off the front and the He has disappeared off the end. Now that's an explanation of the rule as to when the Nun disappears, but I expect you're going to forget that rule. Mm-hmm. And it doesn't really matter that you remember that rule. What you do need to remember, though, is that verbs with the first Nun, the Nun easily disappears. And if you just remember that concept, you're fine. In Yaten and Yapol, the letter into which the Nun has been absorbed is marked as strong by a Dagesh Forte. So that's why there's that dot in the Tav and in the Peh. But, as we've seen before, there are five letters that cannot be strengthened, that cannot take a Dagesh Forte. So the four gutturals, Ayin, Het, He, and Aleph, and then Resh. So you can't double those, you can't put a dot in them. So in a verb stem like Nachal, the Nun cannot be absorbed. So Nachal he inherited. So in this case, the rule doesn't apply. You would still have Yinchal, even though that Nun, the vowel under that Nun is a silent Shava, so not really a vowel. And the Nun should disappear, but it can't disappear. It can't disappear into the following letter. So it stays. So that's the example of Nun. That's the case of Nun. There is actually a rule for when the Nun does and doesn't disappear. For the case of Yod, another weak letter, there is a variety of possibilities. In this one, it's harder to make a strict rule for it. We have Yada, he knew. Yeda, he will know. Yarash, he seized. Yirash, he will seize. So in the first case, Yeda, he will know. Yirash, he will seize. The Yod has stayed there, and then another Yod has been added in for the third person. So sometimes it gets confusing because with a first Yod word, you're adding a Yod on to indicate a third person. And so you get two yods, and sometimes one of those yods disappears, and sometimes it stays. For Yatzak, we have Yitzok, so the yod has disappeared. Note also the loss of the first root letter in these common forms for commands. So Natan, the Nun goes, we get simply Tain, give. Halak, the He goes, we get simply Lech. And Lachak, the Lamed disappears, we get simply Kach. And so these imperatives, as is fitting for an imperative, they become very, very short and abrupt. Okay, so that's the case. A complicating case for the prefixes is that first root letters, particularly if they're a Nun or a Yod, can disappear. Section 5, a final letter can disappear. So first, deal with case of subject suffixes. So we have the verb katal, and he killed. For third feminine singular, we add a suffix a, katala, she killed, and katalu, they killed, for third plural. Again, katal is a strong verb. It's got three strong letters. None of those letters disappear. Well, in this case, we're not dealing with pronouns. For pronouns, pronouns can only be added on as a suffix. In this case, these are just the endings to indicate the person, number, and gender of the verb. And they can be added both onto the front and onto the end. The perfective forms of the verb, it's primarily added onto the end. So katala, katalu, those are suffixes, and those are perfective forms. In fact, another description for the perfective form of the verb is a suffix conjugation, because it's primarily made up with suffixes. The imperfective is primarily made up of prefixes. So ektol, tiktol, yiktol, niktol. A couple of them do have suffixes, tiktolu, yiktolu, but they all have prefixes on. And so another word description for the imperfective is that it's the prefix conjugation. For a couple of them, you have both a prefix and a suffix. But for the imperfective, there will always be a prefix. A aleph, nun, yod, or tav. So there we get a little table indicating what those suffixes are. We've seen these before. So for the verb katal, it would be katalti, katalta, katalt, katala, katal, katalnu, kataltem, katalten, and katalu. Adding those suffixes, those are the suffixes for forming the verb. And then we can be add onto them suffixes which really are adding on additional words which can indicate an object, the object of the verb. And these typically are you adding on a pronoun. So the object of a verb can be expressed by a personal pronoun suffix. So zakaranu, he remembered us. The verb there is zakar, he remembered, and we add on to that anu, first person plural suffix. So we would say that's a third masculine singular verb with a first plural pronominal suffix or objective suffix. Here then are the examples of what the suffixes are for katal. So we'd have katalani, he killed me. Katalka, he killed you. Katalich, he killed you, feminine singular. Katalo, he killed him. Katala, he killed her. Katalanu, he killed us. Katalachem, katalachen, for you, plural. And katalam, katalan, for third plural. Okay, so hopefully those look a little bit familiar. You've seen them before. That's what the suffixes look like for third masculine singular form of the verb, katal. What happens if we have katala, she killed, and we want to add a suffix onto that? The problem now we have is that ends in a he, and he readily disappears. Or in this case, what will often happen is it will get transformed into a tav, because now it gets put into construct form. So we have katala, she killed, but if you want to say she killed you, kataltka, and the hey turns into tav, and then you add the suffix onto that. Katalta, you killed, that you can just add the suffix straight onto it, kataltam. Katalti, you, feminine singular, killed. Katalti who, add the suffix onto that. In this table, you'll see that the word katal is lengthened by adding a personal pronoun suffix. The ka of its first syllable is shortened to a vocal shava. We call that vowel reduction. And this tends to happen by adding on a suffix. You've made the word longer, it's got more syllables. And it's just natural part of the way we speak that the more syllables a word gets, you tend to shorten up the first syllables early on. And then refers us to a description in page 349 in the glossary of how that vowel reduction works. So that's the second way suffixes can be added on to the stem. So the first way suffixes get added on is to indicate the person, number, and gender of the stem. Second way is by adding on a pronoun to indicate the suffix. And then sometimes the end of the stem can change. So if there is a weak letter as the last letter, it can disappear. So in asa, it ends with it's a third he. Baka, also a third he, he wept. Natan is a third nun, he gave. And Zakain, he was also a third nun. So those weak letters, they tend to disappear. Or a repetition of the second root letter, and this is a case I pointed out an hour ago, arar, he cursed, savav, he surrounded, where the second and the third letters are the same, and one of those tends to disappear. So, case A, when the verb stem ends in hey, what we call the third hey verb, the hey is often dropped. Baka, he wept, baku, they wept. The hay has disappeared. and Vayevk, and he wept. Allah, he went up, Vaya'alu, they will go up. Ra'ah, he saw, Yireh, he will see, Yireh, let him see. So in all those instances, that hey has disappeared. So if you just remember, hey is a weak letter, tends to disappear, you'll be fine. You don't have to know the rules as to how it disappears. Then he notes here, most stems that ended in hey originally ended in yod. So often you'll find that a yod takes its place. So asa, he did, and asiti, I did. So the hey has disappeared, but it's left behind a yod. Bana, he built. Banita, you built. Same thing. Shata, he drank. Shatinu, we drank. Case three, in third person, singular feminine of the perfective, the hey of the stem becomes tav before the suffix he, she. So asa, he did. Asita, she did. And we've seen this in other places where a hey, when you add something onto a hey, the hey turns into a tav. You can think of that becoming a bit like a construct. Kila, he finished. Kilata, she finished. Now, you don't have to know, I'm not sure there actually is a fully developed rule as to when each of these things is going to happen. Important for you is just that you recognize that this can happen. And so you see a word, and you see asiti, I did, and you're looking around for the root, and you say, well, there's an I in there, and there's a seen there, they both have to be part of the root, but what's the third letter going to be? And you might remember, oh yes, it's a hey. Hey has disappeared. Hays tend to disappear. So that's case A, third hey. Case B, so we have a third nun. And the nun can survive. The endings may be regular, so zakain and zakanti. I was old, the nun stays. Or the nun can disappear. And this happens in the common verb natan. And it would disappear if it would have a silent shava. And so natan, he gave. Natati would be natanti, but the nun there disappears, gets assimilated into the tav. And then we have the examples of tate and latate, where tate is the infinitive, and both the first and the last nuns have disappeared. They've both gone. So that's the case of the final nun, third nun verb, and then the final case is when the last two letters are the same. And they may be written as one letter, and you may sometimes have a holam vav. We call these geminate verbs. Geminate from Gemini, the twin. Right, so geminate just means twin. Savav, he's surrounded, can be sav. Savoti, I went around, so there we have that holam vav. Yasov, kalal, to be small, can be kalal or kal. So it's just a whole category of verbs, these geminates, where the second and third root letters are the same, and you might have one or both of them. Case six. Hebrew verbs where we have modification of the stem that indicates a different emphasis or meaning. And this is going to introduce you to a way, a completely different way in which Semitic languages work. Here we note the five major forms in which a stem may be found. And at the moment, this is going to be probably seem overwhelmingly new to you, but it will be covered adequately in lessons 14 through 17. So we've encountered the verb katal, he killed, and shalak, he sent, and yalada, she gave birth to. We, in case two, we can have the verb niktal, where now we've added on a prefix n, and that has turned it into a passive. And we call this a nifal. So you may have heard of that term and never really knew what it is. So nifal is a what we call a stem of the verb, and the nifal stem and it turns things and the verbs into a passive. Nishlach, he was sent. Nolad, he was born. Case three, Kittel, he slew. Now there's a dagesh in the middle consonant, and we call this a PL. Actually, maybe I should do these in conjunction with the notes down below. So case one is the kal. Kal just means light, or we can think of that as being plain vanilla. Kal forms usually indicate what someone did or state that we're in. Kal forms may also be called pa'al, although it's very, very rare to call them pa'al, but usually kal. Case two, nifal. In the perfective form, it takes a nun prefix. Nifal forms often indicate what one does to oneself, which can be middle or reflexive form, or what is done to one, passive. Case three, this ketel, shilach, yalada, where you put a dagesh in the middle letter, making it strong, and the vowel pattern, the regular vowel pattern for it would be e, so hirek tsere. PL forms often indicate a strong form of action or something done eagerly or urgently or action producing a result. So it can be emphatic in some way or what we call stative, is that they result in a state of something. So that's the PL. And then it will have a passive form called the pual. Case four, hiktil, he caused to kill, and holid, he caused to be born. This is the hifil. And in the perfective forms, it takes a he as a prefix, he, and then often there is an added vowel, e, a hirik yod, added in between the second and third consonants. Hifil forms are often causative, so he caused to kill, holid, he caused to be born, so i.e. that's used of a father causing a son to be born. So that's the hifil, and then it too has a passive form called the hofal. And then finally, number five, hitkatel, he killed himself. This is called the hitpael. And notice we have the prefix hit, and then the regular vowel pattern is a'e, pata, tsere. And hitpael forms usually indicate an action which concerns the doer, rather than anyone else. So these really are reflexive. Hit Pael, hit Katel, he killed himself. Hit Halech, and this from Halak, the hit Pael means he walked to and fro. So you know, the person walking by himself back and forth, back and forth. And this then is a form that gets used of walking with God. So this is the stem system of Hebrew. So the kal, the nifal, pl with its passive form pual, hifil with its passive form hofal, and hitpael. And we don't have anything remotely like this in English or in Greek. This is really a unique feature of Semitic languages. And it's really one of the benefits of learning Hebrew is because this stuff is really very difficult to translate into English. So when you learn Hebrew, you learn this whole different way in which verbs can function. And these are all built upon the same root letters, but you're just adding prefixes and suffixes and then infixes, which are where you're adding things into the middle, like for the hifil, adding that hirik yod into this, between the second and third root letters. Now, at this point, that seems completely overwhelming, but a few lessons further on, we will cover these in more detail. And so then, when we go through and we read some narrative and you're parsing a word, not only do you come to a verb, not only do you have to say third masculine singular, but then you have to decide, is it kal, nifal, hifil, what stem is it in, and that.
Okay. Yes. So we read the word caused him to swear in Genesis,
mm-hmm.
4, verse 3. So is that a hifil?
That is a hifil, yes. And you can tell it's a hifil from the hirik yod there between the bait and the ayin. So the first word of verse 3, Ashbiaka, the Ashbiaka, the good instance. We break this down into its component parts. How do you figure what's going on here? So you might recognize we've got three things that could be root letters: the Sheen, Bet, and Ayin, right? So that must be the root. They're strong letters. None of them has disappeared. So it has something to do with swearing an oath, something like that. There is that Hirik Yod in there. That would identify it as a Hifil. There's an Aleph on the front, an Aleph prefix, which indicates first person singular. There's a Vav on the front of that, which is the conjunction. And so you have to find out some way to translate. There's a Ka on the end, which would be the object, the objective suffix. And Ka is you, masculine singular, second masculine singular. So with a little bit of thinking about that, you can actually, this is really what Dobson is trying to advocate, is that you learn how to break that down into its component parts and puzzle that out. Now, and again, this just practice with reading is where this will come. But you then recognize, the Aleph says, you recognize the root, you recognize this, because you can see the three root letters, you recognize the stem. In this case, the Hifil is fairly easy to recognize. And it's here that it's got that distinguishing feature of the Hirik Yod. You recognize that it's first person singular because it's got an Aleph prefix. And then you recognize that there's that Ka suffix, so second masculine singular. And then it's got a Vav, a conjunction prefix on the front. And so that's sort of your detective work. And then you put all that together and says, I will make you swear. Or then, and I will make you swear. Which takes us 6 words in English to translate. And it's rendered as 1 word in Hebrew. Okay? So that's a good illustration of really what this introduction is all about, is these prefixes and suffixes. So the Aleph prefix is, that's part of the verb pattern. The V on the front of that, that's another prefix, but that's a separate word added on. The Ka on the end is another separate word added on as a suffix. And then the Hirik Yod is part of the stem pattern of the Hifil stem, and we would call that an infix. So it's added into the middle. Okay. So prefixes can be either part of the verb pattern or separate words added on. Suffixes can be part of the verb pattern or separate words added on. And then we get this changing of to do with the stem. And now sometimes you might have 2 words added on the front. So you might have a Vav on the front and then a Bet or a K or a Lamed or something like that. So you could have 2 words prefixed on the front and a prefix for the verb pattern and a suffix for the verb pattern and a word suffixed on the back, and all jammed together to make 1 word and take 6 words in English to translate. Okay. And then section 7, page 108, Dobson says really just what I have said. To read Hebrew successfully, it's more important to learn the significant parts of words, that you learn the markers, than to learn grammatical tables. So this was the old style of learning. It was just you had to learn the tables of all the different forms of the verb, and you just learn it all by rote. And it's really not a very good way of learning to effectively use the language. It's far better that, and the more we read and hear Hebrew, the better we shall understand. To we no longer have to think what words mean because we know them. And the key is to be able to recognize these components. And you may not be able to explain all the precise vowel patterns, but you don't have to come up with an explanation of the vowel patterns. You just have to recognize the markers, the component bits. Okay? So in this approach to Hebrew, there's no learning of these long paradigms of tables and tables and tables. Yeah. Some of them are given at the back. So typically in the old days, you would be faced with a chart like this, and early on, you would just have to commit this whole thing to memory. Far better is to say, to be able to recognize, okay, there's aleph prefix for singular, ka suffix, second masculine singular, this ih infix, that's a hifil, and so on. Okay? So, that might seem a little overwhelming, but this is where just practice comes in, and the more we read, the more you'll be able to just more quickly you'll be able to say, oh yes, there's a prefix, there's a suffix, there's a couple of prefixes, and recognize these component parts. Okay? So next week we'll launch into lesson 9.